who you are is effortless. The love you are, the consciousness you are is absolutely effortless. It's your nature. But on top of that, you have at least one lifetime of protection and fear that has been put there through a lot of effort, often unconscious effort, and needs counter effort in order to at least open it enough so your natural being can shine and be offered. So as you're sitting here right now, just feel, for instance, are you fidgeting? If you are, then you're being less than the deepest being you can be. The deepest being, if you walk into an insane asylum, where beings are, in general, less deep. There are obviously some insane people who are very wise, but I'm talking about your run-of-the-mill, really wacko types. They're walking around totally, like, touching themselves and fidgeting, saying the same things. You know, knocking their head against the wall over and over. You know, like, have you ever been to an insane asylum? Well, if you had a big mirror up here, and you watched yourselves all, like, doing that, you would see a modified version of that. Basically, we all exist as infinity, and that's terrifying if you're not used to it, which most people are yet not used to. And so the assurance that you exist as a separate person, which is gained by touching yourself physically, you know, just touching yourself, it's like, yeah, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here, or thinking to yourself. I mean, when you consider it, thinking to yourself is they're your thoughts. Why do you need to think them back to yourself? So all the time you spend like going around going like, okay, well, she said this to me and he did this and now what am I going to do? And all of that is basically ways to convince yourself that you exist, your life is going somewhere, everything's okay. Even though it might feel like tension, it's exactly like, you know, fidgeting like an insane person, but they're thought fidgets. So as you open, in general, your body comes to a more open, less fidgeting rest. I mean, it's still fully alive, but it's not touching itself in order to reassure itself. Your face is no longer trying to make sure it's still there. Your thoughts no longer continue to exist simply to kind of reinforce your sense of self. You could think, you could move, but you do that as a tool. It's like, you know, you need to balance your checkbook. You have to add. You need to meet somebody at 3 o'clock. You look at your watch, you go, it's 3 o'clock, and you walk there. But we have habits to the contrary. So most of us, even now, are fidgeting, are thinking. Another habit that we have is constricting our breath. So everyone is like, that takes an incredible amount of effort to hold to hold that depth of contraction. And so you may, in the moment, want to just, you may not, but you may want to relax your breath a bit and breathe. And we'll be doing a lot of exercises to help with all the things I've just mentioned, but I just want to let you know beforehand, even as you're sitting here, you don't have to continue old habits. You don't have to breathe shallowly, think, fidget, convince yourself that you're separate and exist as a separate being, because although obviously these bodies are all separate, so are all these trees separate. It's as you open, what you realize is this essential non-separation that the best lovemaking, for instance, even though there's two bodies, what happens during the lovemaking is they kind of meld together into oneness and one heart and one love. Raise your hand if you've ever had at least a taste of that. Thanks. In that moment of lovemaking, you were not thinking into yourself, probably. I don't know, maybe you were. You were probably really opening with your partner. And so you can actually open that deeply with everybody all of your life. And then the sexual aspect is something you could consciously play as an art, which we'll be doing practices with the individual or individuals you choose to be sexual with in your life, which would be very few in general. I mean, look around the room. How many people would you really, really want to be totally open and sexual with? I mean, it's a titillating thought for a while, but when you get down to it, it's like, those trees are starting to look pretty good. Okay. It wouldn't take you long if we stood you in front of somebody and you just stood in front of each other and I had you feel into each other that this person in front of you, although you can open in love with them, you would be thinking like, geez, do I really want to combine myself with this person? This workshop is about what I call the third stage, or learning how to open completely with each other. And when you do that, you need to remain formal. Let's take a spectrum. You're walking around in Italy, you're a woman. Some guy pinches your ass and says like, God, you're beautiful, I love you. You know, like, okay, there's one level of interaction. So I would call that first stage interaction where you violate each other's boundaries, whether you like it or not. Some people like it, some people don't. But in our country, that you could be arrested for that. If you did that like at the workplace, it would be considered sexual harassment. So the first stage is that you have boundaries that sometimes are violated, and we would like to consider that illegal in our culture. So we've moved to a second stage culture where we've all developed what we would call healthy boundaries. So if you're at work and somebody comes up and grabs your genitals, we all understand that's inappropriate behavior. And at least over, for the last several years, you could be, you know, it's a crime to do that, right? I mean, there are no, am I insulting anyone here? Any serious genital grabbers? That this is right. So in the second stage, we're walking around with very clear boundaries. You would never walk up to somebody and open completely with them and show them your full sexuality unless they were your sexual partner, because you would be violating their boundaries. I mean, if you like take out your genitals and just show yourself to somebody on the street, you'd be arrested, because we have second stage laws in place to protect us from first stage wackos. However, what we're doing here is learning how to expand. What we're doing here is practicing the third stage. And in the third stage, you specifically agree to violate each other's boundaries. Now, you can only do that when you can make the agreement of what boundaries are violatable and what boundaries are not, because we're not married to each other. A third stage intimacy, to make it clear, is not a relationship where one partner goes, well, I have my life and you have your life, and we both are responsible for our own happiness. I can't make you happy and you can't make me happy, but we could work together on that. But when, you know, if it comes to it, I've got my bank account, you've got your bank account, we've got our third bank account, we put in our equal 50-50 money in, but, you know, we have it even and we got this safety net thing. That's a second stage intimacy. A third stage intimacy is you basically say, I'm committing to open you to God and nothing's going to stop me. And the stat partner says the same thing. I'm committed to open you to God and nothing's going to stop me, including you saying stop. So you only enter a third stage intimacy with somebody you trust enough that they can feel your heart better than you can. In a third stage intimacy, you choose as your intimate partner, or if you're together already, you cultivate yourselves into the third stage so that you trust your partner's capacity to feel your heart more than you trust your own capacity to feel your heart. In the second stage, you go, well, how would you know what I'm feeling? I'm me. You're not you. In the second stage, you are, because you're walking around with all this tension and boundaries and so forth. But how many times, you just tell me this, how many times have you been with a friend, let alone an intimate partner, and they're like going like, I am not angry. And you could see they're totally angry. Or they're saying like, no, I'm really sure I want to do this now. And you're thinking like, raise your hand if you've ever felt that you knew what was really going on and they didn't. Okay. So in the third stage, you acknowledge that. You acknowledge that because of these shells we form from childhood, the way we've been treated as children, the way our intimate partners, we've protected our hearts from our own consciousness. We would all commit suicide if we actually felt what our heart feels, or we'd be weeping madly, or we'd be enlightened, one of the three, because our heart right now wants nothing more than absolute openness. Any of you who are not in absolute openness, total love right now through every cell of your body with no sense of separation whatsoever, are in pain. And if you allow yourself to feel that, you'd be on Zoloft, Prozac, you'd be injuring yourself just to make sure you exist. I mean, you know what you do, stuff your face, masturbate, watch TV, distract yourself, work real hard, have family so you can't think about anything else. I mean, almost our entire culture is based on media, medication, and busyness to the extent that we can't feel the extreme pain we're in right now. The essential masculine pain is not knowing where you're going in your life, and the essential feminine pain is not being able to share enough love with whoever you choose to as you go. Now, we both have both pains, but more feminine people tend to be hurt more by the lack of flow of love, whereas more masculine people couldn't care less. And more masculine people tend to feel collapsed when they don't really know their purpose in life. Whereas if a feminine person's flowing completely in love with everyone she knows, that is the purpose in her life. And she might be a huge businessman too, but what really hurts is the lack of love. So, business person. The third stage is about allowing that extreme pain that we're experiencing in the moment to be fully felt and expressed, and then offering our deepest gift of love and purpose right through that pain. That is the third stage practice that we're going to be doing the rest of this weekend. Allowing yourself to feel whatever suffering you're feeling, allowing it to show through your body if it wants to. You don't have to force anything. But I mean, if you cry, you cry. You might laugh. You might have all kinds of expressions other than some kind of silly, superficial smile. And then in the midst of that pain, offering your deepest gift. That is what you are here to do. Nothing will fulfill you except offering your love or your deepest purpose. There's different ways of saying it. But giving yourself entirely. Only in the moment of giving yourself entirely are you fulfilled. Your existence is fulfilled. Your birth is fulfilled when you're giving yourself entirely. Every part of you, and everyone's very unique in their constitution, so we all have very different gifts to give. But you know when someone's giving their deepest gift, you could feel there's nothing held back. There's no self-consciousness. There's no closure. They aren't fidgeting, thinking, breathing shallowly. I mean, just imagine if I'm here talking to you and I'm like doing this. Oh, we all have to give our deepest gift. I mean, you just wouldn't trust me very much because you could feel the closure. So when you're with partners, you'll feel different degrees of that closure. And we're here to serve each other beyond that. We're here to serve each other beyond here. You are here to serve every partner you work with.
Yeah.
How can I evoke presence in my man?
Women are very sensitive, both in the positive way of feeling a man who's very present and offers her the kind of loving command that would allow her to relax her own need to guide herself, which is very blissful when you're with somebody who, like a good dancer who could lead so well. He takes your moves into account. He anticipates you. He's right there. And you can just go, oh, you can surrender and really enjoy the dance rather than some guys are like, what do you want to do? You cultivate in your man and you attract a man who is as present as you will tolerate. So if you're willing to hang out with a guy who doesn't know how to lead the dance, so to speak, that's who you'll get. And your heart will never experience the depth of surrender, of love, of the capacity to go, I trust you more than myself in guiding me because you just guide me to bliss. And he says, I trust your heart more than mine in knowing when I'm in integrity. And that trusting larger than yourself won't occur because that man won't appear in your life. He won't be attracted to you and you won't only settle for him. You'll settle for less. So the chopping the head off metaphor is when your man, your chosen man, the man in your life, your boyfriend, your husband, that's who I'm talking about, a potential boyfriend or husband. I'm not talking about some stranger or your boss or coworker. I'm talking about intimate relationship. In an intimate relationship, your third stage responsibility as a feminine practitioner is to allow your body to constantly, responsively reflect the pleasure your man's presence is evoking in you, the surrender, or the anger or pain or hurt. So the moment your man, like we were kind of joking with your assigned partner, you know, his head was off to the side and it was like, eh. And then his head was on straight and all the women went, mmm. Well, I guarantee you, if you did that for 1 hour with him in real life, every time I went this go, eh, mmm, eh, mmm, it would take him maybe 3 minutes to never do that again. Try it. So if you reflect to your man both your devotional bliss at his real presence and your pain or hurt or anger, and the chopping the head off is just a metaphor for the anger, like eventually, I mean, how long can you tolerate a guy who's like, you know, you just feel like chopping his head off, you know, you feel like enough already, you know, you want to kill him is another way of saying it, you know, you just, it's just like, there's so much more to you. Why are you doing this? Why are you belittling yourself? Why are you giving me so little? You're such a deep and good man. Why are you being such a jerk? That's chopping his head off. The feeling is like, I'm not tolerating this, you know, and that lack of tolerating anything less than his best is a third stage gift you could give him. And the way, when you asked how, the way you do it is how I just described it. You bodily demonstrate to him. By bodily, I mean in your facial expression, the tone of your voice, the position or the movements of your body. It's all better than words. Words will almost immediately bring almost everyone into second stage discussion. You know, like, well, I feel that you're me. Well, I feel. But if you just go, ugh, he'll get the message. Or if you go, oh, oh. He'll get the message. It's a lot better than going, that disturbs me. Or I worship that part of you. It's much better to, in sound and gesture and facial expression and your whole body, to responsively show him and how what he is evoking in you, your worship or your disgust. Now, the next part to this question, which you didn't ask, but I'm going to answer, is that in general, masculine people are much less energetically sensitive than feminine people. And so you will have to exaggeratedly show your feeling before he even knows you're showing your feeling. So what usually happens is he disgusts you or he angers you in some way. And so you show it like by pouring him a cup of coffee and putting it down hard, you know, like, and you expect like he's going to notice anything whatsoever. And then that doesn't work. So you kind of like walk out of the room in a huff. And that doesn't work. So you kind of like just look at him like this. And he like goes back to his newspaper or something. For him to really know something's going on with you, even pleasurably. I mean, how often when you're making love and you just have like this incredible orgasm, the guy goes like, did you just come? Something like that. So he really doesn't know. It's not that he's stupid. It's not that he's like a bad person. The masculine inhabits, in general, a very different domain than the feminine. It does not inhabit the energetic domain. It inhabits the domain of consciousness. You have to exaggerate, for his sake, your response to his presence or lack of presence. So to you, it's your genuine response, but now you have to like turn up the volume for his sake. You have to show it in a big way. Now, with another woman, you could communicate huge amounts just with the way you hand them a cup of tea. You know, a little tilt of the head could mean, you fucking bitch, I'll kill you if you look at my man again. But do you like, you know, just all like, you know. And then the way she takes the cup is like her acknowledgement. You know, and it's everything spoken. The men are out and they're like, you know, they know what's going on. Now, just like men tend to treat women like men, women tend to treat men like women. You assume they're like you. So you assume they're picking up all of these messages. That's why men will always say, why didn't you tell me? And you go, I did tell you. Because you didn't in his reality. In his reality, he needs it loud and clear, and it's most loud and clear when it's not verbal, because that will reduce it to an intellectual discussion. When it's like you're just going, when you're on your knees going, ah, 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 he'll go, wow, I must be doing something good. And when you're going, fuck you, and it's beating you, he'll go, I'm probably not doing something good. In between those two extremes, it's kind of gray for men. Really. I mean, he'll be making love with you, and you go, ugh, and he'll go, did I hurt you, or was that good? I mean, he really can't tell. And to you, it's obvious. To another woman, it would be obvious. To a man who's really strong in his feminine, it would be more obvious. But a man who's really strong in his masculine is less sensitive in that domain. It's just the way they're built. So the way to help a man grow, your man, you know, your chosen man in your life when you have one, or the way to attract a man who will meet you, is to only tolerate a man's best, to show your devotion to his depth of consciousness in exaggerated ways compared to what you would naturally do, and to show your disgust or anger at his lack of presence in exaggerated ways compared to what you would do. And that's the fastest and best way to help your man grow.
There's something that I've never read in your books or heard in your tapes, a question that I'm afraid to ask, but I don't even know if it's in the scope of the workshop about something. That it can't just be me in this room, you know, that's had this experience, and that is of domestic violence and abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And when you speak up, it's like, I chose him because he was safe.
Mm-hmm.
My experience of speaking up is, you know, you get hit.
Well, that's the first stage. If you're with a first stage man, let me put it this way. If you've chosen a man who does that, you deserve him.
Agree. But I notice there's a lot of residue that kind of...
Absolutely. Your nervous system stores the fear of that happening again and the pain that that's induced. And that's why people stay at the second stage. It's safe. That's why boundaries and talking and saying, I'm feeling angry rather than hitting each other, is considered better than the first stage, lashing out. In the third stage, you are only angry because someone else is not living up to their potential. There is no such thing as third stage anger because you need something. If you're angry at a man because he's not giving you something, that's first stage anger, and you will attract first stage anger in your man. You will be abused. If you're angry because he's not living his deepest consciousness for his sake, for the world's sake, that's third stage anger.
Second stage therapy to get rid of that kink?
Yeah, second stage therapy is what you use to grow from the first stage to the second stage. So establishing boundaries, reliving your past experiences, going into your childhood, finding out your relationships to your parents, working out the past that still influences you, getting rid of the things stored in your nervous system, you know, even rapid eye motion, whatever the heck works. Just do whatever works so that you can offer your gift to a man fully. And then you attract a man who can offer you his gift fully. But there are very, very few men and women. You know, earlier today I said something about like three people maybe walking out of her. I wasn't joking. There's a substantial amount of research done now on people's levels of spiritual growth because all the boomers are trying to grow and they're all, the scientist boomers are measuring their friends. And so you get all this stuff. And there's really a huge body of research. And, 0.1% of people on earth today, 0.1% of people on earth today are ready for these practices. It's not a lot. Now, maybe they're all gathered in this room, but probably not. So there's probably a much larger percentage than that in this room, or they wouldn't be here. They wouldn't be attracted to it. But still, it's a rare person who's actually ready to live for the sake of others. It's very common for people to live for their needs, and it's a little less common for people to live like in a compromise way of like, let's try to work this out, but I never want you hitting me. You know, boundaries of safety. But it's a rare person who says, I trust you so much, you could kill me if you think you need to. Wouldn't you want a man who would die for your sake? Well, why is it so odd then? I mean, isn't that the ultimate kind of And it pervades down, in these kind of movies and so forth, where the man, he has his family who he's totally devoted to, and he's called, out to a dangerous mission for the sake of the world. And, the wife says, if you said you'd finally quit and you're not, and if you go, don't expect me to be waiting for you or something. And he goes, look, I love you, honey, you know that, but I have to go and do this thing. And he goes off and he does the thing and he saves the world and he comes back. And then the woman's like, on the other hand, if she goes, don't expect me to be waiting. And he goes, okay, I'll stay. I won't save the world. She would immediately lose trust in him, even though she's saying, how could you leave me? So that's the difference between the second and the third stage in more dramatic terms. And it's the second stage, you'd say, the way I'm feeling is that you've made a commitment to me and you're jeopardizing that commitment by going out to save the world. And he goes, you're right, I'm going to not save the world. And so the third stage man just basically feels, what is the highest good he could do for the world, for you, for everybody? And does it at the expense of whatever that is. And it's often quite an expense, not necessarily, but that's... So as a woman, how much love are you willing to give and how much bullshit are you willing not to tolerate? Both together. So when you're with a man, the moment he's less than conscious, you go, ah! He goes... And the moment he's totally conscious, you're worshiping him. And in that worship, you see he goes, and you go, ah! Comes back to present. How much are you willing to live that way? And then you'll get and evoke and cultivate a man who's your reciprocal, who doesn't settle for anything less than your love, your best, for your sake. Not because he's some needy guy who needs you to love him. He's grown through that. That's a first stage man. Third stage man couldn't care less whether you were alive or dead, basically. He loves you. He wants to be with you. But if you leave, there's other women around. He doesn't need you at all. He's committed his life to serving you, open to God. You could take it or leave it. That's quite a cost to be with somebody like that because there are no games. What are you going to do? Well, okay. And likewise, he doesn't have an out either. He's unconscious, you're chopping his head off. He's conscious, you're worshiping. There's no out. There's no rest. There's rest in the healthy sense of, everyone needs to sleep, everyone needs to lay down, everyone needs to rest in that sense. But even laying down, you don't get to lay down and go, I'm not doing this anymore, and lay down like that. You would have to consciously say, I love you. I'm with you. I'm feeling you. I need a half an hour to sleep right now. And then take a half an hour sleep and come back to full presence. That's a whole different thing than coming home and going like, you don't know if he's out for the day, out for the year. You know what I mean? So there are ways to rest with total integrity, total love, and ways to rest that are cop-outs. So it's the cop-out part that you eliminate in the third stage. So I don't know if that answered your question about abuse. Abuse is rampant. I don't write about it or talk about it because I'm working singularly with moving into the third stage. There's many, many, many more people on earth who need to move from the first to the second stage. And there's lots of good work available, workshops, books, people, therapists, to help people establish healthy boundaries and say no and have the integrity to live their own life and not fall into traps and not, try to please others for their, all of that stuff. There's a lot of good work to grow beyond all of that. I'm not here to do that. I'm not here to write about that. I'm not here to teach that. So I don't mention it because there's a lot of good work out there. I don't want to be redundant with other people. So, if you need help there, I'm sure I could recommend, or other people could recommend, books and people and workshops for that. I'm working with those 0.1% where there's almost nobody working it. There's almost nowhere you could go and find somebody who's willing to go through what happens when people are willing to sacrifice everything for the sake of love, but with absolute integrity, not like the 60s where it was totally narcissistic pleasure, like I could do whatever I want. It's I could only do what serves others. It's the discipline of love. It's not like, oh, I'm free. It's I'm free to do exactly what serves others and nothing else, which is incredible discipline. You can't tilt your head. In the 60s, everyone's like, yeah. you know, I mean, you could do anything you want because it was like the freedom of the self. It was pure narcissism, which was a good thing at the time. But now the 0.1% is ready to take the next step beyond what feels good to them and die absolutely in the bliss of consciousness or love, having given everything in every moment or every moment they could. And that's what we're here to learn to do. And physical violence does take place in the third stage. It's always an act of love. It never lasts more than a microsecond in general. But feel into it for yourself. I don't know, you have a little child and your kid's got a bottle of poison to their lips and is tilting it up. You love your child. You say, "Excuse me, I'd like to talk with you." Or is there a kind of burst of rage even where you go, "No!" I mean, you don't even think about it. I mean, you love the child so much, you go, "No!" And you grab the ball and you throw it down. You might even shake the child from love. There's no hate in it whatsoever. You love the child so much, you go, "No!" And the child gets all shaken up and maybe you're both crying now and you hold the child and say, "I love you, I love you, don't do that." Well, that thunderbolt of anger is going to communicate more to that child than any amount of, "Excuse me, I'd like to sit down with you and talk about drinking poison." So the same thing is true in intimacy. There are moments, they wouldn't be frequent, maybe a couple times a year probably at the most. I don't know. I mean, it would vary depending on your situation. Where smacking somebody you love, for instance, slapping them, smacking them, pushing them, would be a perfectly loving thing to do in the moment. Perhaps just shouting. But there's just no boundaries in the third stage because you've chosen somebody you trust more than yourself. You don't do a third stage relationship with somebody you don't trust more than yourself. That is the definition. That is what a third stage relationship is. You say, "Look, I know sometimes you're going to be wrong, and I'm willing to suffer through that because in general, you open me more than I can open myself." You say that to him, he says that to you. And you commit to that. And that is terrifying for people who are still working at becoming whole people themselves and who have been traumatized in the past by opening themselves with people who abused them. And there is residue, it's very real, that needs to be worked with in therapy and so forth until you're ready to take the next step.
I always understood about the radiance and have really been focusing on that part, but when I heard, and somehow in reading all of your books and listening to all of your tapes and workshops, seem to have missed that chopping mm-hmm. off your hands until today, mm-hmm. I'm thinking, "Oh, you know, that's a whole different move." Mm-hmm. And I saw that come up, and I was just curious if that, in wanting to move into the out of the safety of the second stage into the third stage, I found that's like, wow, that's a big deal.
It's a big deal. Like I said, don't do it unless it just hurts too much to stay in the second stage. I mean, don't do it because it's a free fall. Anything could happen. I mean, I remember there's a book back there. Are there any Wild Nights left? I don't. There's a book back there that recounts like the tip of the iceberg of some of my experience with one of my teachers. You know, the first thing he did was have my best friend fuck my wife right in front of me. And that was like hors d'oeuvres. And for 6 years it just got, that was the easiest thing probably. I mean, it was just like, you want to grow? You want to see if you could feel God in every moment? You're ready to surrender everything for the sake of love? Let's play. It's like you want to try it for real? There is nothing. There's no rock that's left unturned. I still have plenty of rocks, but my life is committed to doing my best at the pace I could handle without completely disintegrating, at unturning every rock that's possible until all of it is revealed as divine. All of it, every part of you, every part of me, every part of everything. So there's no fear whatsoever involved in our relationship or my relationship with my spouse or my best friends or the world. I mean, there's healthy fear if a tiger is jumping at me. I mean, there's fear like that, but I'm talking about fear that's less than love. So, yeah, you want to enter the third stage with any stability. It takes practicing at the edge of what terrorizes you the most, what makes you close down from love the most. Set up that circumstance, practice loving in it. When you could do it, set up the next most terrifying circumstance, practice loving there, the next one, until anything that you would have hesitated facing in open love, you have faced. And at that point, there's a kind of love freedom that occurs because what's the worst that can happen? You've already loved through it. I mean, there are still bad things, obviously, that could happen, but you're not walking around holding that anxiety.
Do I have to let a man lead me to have a good intimacy?
There's so much in that question that let me just say a few things and maybe it'll be enough. First of all, letting the man lead means smashing him when he's off and worshiping him when he's on. So who's leading? It's a total... I mean, a man, think of just dancing. A man can't lead dancing if you're just like hanging there like a fish or something, you know? I mean, you have to give him something for him to guide, and you have to show your pleasure and displeasure at his guidance so he knows what to do. Otherwise, he's just, you're either a dead fish and he's just kind of flopping you around, which is no good. Or if you're not giving him sufficient feedback, he just does the same thing over and over. If you've ever noticed that, that's what men do. Like, or whatever they're doing, if it's not sexual, just like they'll keep doing the same thing. You're going like, all right, already, you know, like. It's okay to laugh, you know. We all know who you're laughing at.